Hey Podders, welcome to episode 84 of CosPod, the podcast for all things cosplay. Welcome to all of our new listeners. I've noticed that we've actually been bringing in a lot more international viewers lately. We were actually just listed on a podcast aggregator in Sweden, of all things. So we have quite a few residents of the peninsula now listening to us, so welcome to all of you guys. And of course, we always encourage you guys to share our show with those who have not heard us before. I highly suggest that you have any fellow listeners start in the middle of the podcast, as opposed to starting with episode one.
Please don't start with episode one.
The reason for that, and I say this because we actually see the web stats of who's downloading what, and a lot of people start with episode one. The first 10 episodes or so were not our best work. They weren't bad by any means, but they weren't our best work. So we encourage you guys, you'll probably want to start right about episode 26, I would say, because that's after we finally got into the groove. You can still go back and listen to the other ones, but if you're going to start the podcast to get a better idea of what we're like, start in the middle.
Actually, this is what I do a lot whenever someone recommends a podcast to me, is I'll start in the middle, and then I'll start with I'll do the second episode, it's the latest episode. The third episode, I'll do the first one, because I like to see what their progression is and just kind of get a general idea of how they started and where they are now. So yeah, it's good to start in the middle when it comes to podcasts.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's start off, as we normally do, with our cosplay updates. I see you have yours in the background.
I do. It's sitting all up here. Look at the prettiness. The clamp prettiness that's going on. Yay! I think I've got 8 yards of fabric on this right now, and I've got all the fabric pieces done. Yeah, not everything's on the mannequin, of course, because there's 2 leg pieces and an arm piece as well. But yeah, 8 yards of just nothing but fabric mess. And gosh, Fu is going to be very interesting to wear. She's pretty, though. I like it. It turned out a lot better than I anticipated. I think my whole thing with this is that a lot of people are like, man, you're working so fast. And I'm like, no, not really. It's just a lot of straight lines and rectangles, and you just put elastic in it and you call it a day. It's not that difficult. It just seems daunting because it's a ton of flip and fabric. I'm doing this. It's Fu from Magic Knight Ray Earth, by the way. This is an art book version of it. I'm doing this with 2 friends of mine for Akon, and I've basically become the testing dummy. I've been making all the patterns, and I've been trying everything first to figure out what's going to work, what's not going to work, and then I'm sending them photos of, okay, this is my failed attempt. Don't do this. Because I made like 2 different versions of the skirt before I came up with this last one, and I'm completely out of fabric now. So I'm glad I got this to work, or I would be SOL. So this has been my week-long project, and now that's done, so now I get to do the magical floating armor that makes no sense. That'll be great. Probably out of foam. Such is Clamp. Yeah. Like, she has this weird, like, I don't even know what to call it. It's like a cape, but not really a cape. It's just random mass of fabric that floats behind her. So I basically have made 2 large tubes of fabric. I'm sticking it at the top of my corset, and I'm just going to wrap it around my body in a weird-ass way. So that whenever we take photos, I can just fling it out and it'll look great. But when I'm walking, it'll be wrapped around me. Or only put them on for
that
photos.
Works.
Yeah, you know.
You
being creative. Yay, Clamp! There's a reason why I haven't jumped into it. And Amber and I were talking about an entertaining Clamp skit we may have to do in the future because of it.
It's legit.
It's legit. It's legit real. So what have you been working on, Amber?
This has been my life for the last, like, several days, which now I'm putting gesso on the back, because originally it's black foam. I used whatever scraps I had lying around, because realistically at this point, I don't have the budget right now to get new cosplay materials due to various medical expenses that I have had recently crop up. And due to the fact that health insurance is expensive, kids, when it's not through your employer. But so I've been working on armor pieces and gessoing the back of the pieces that aren't white. And, ow.
Don't hurt yourself.
Well, my cord caught on the back of this. I'll have to kind of scroll over to the side since my dress form does not fit all on camera. You can see it's all taped down to the dress form because I was using a heat gun on it earlier. Of course, you know, me and fire and heat guns and things like that.
Yay! Exactly.
So, like, I was heat shaping all of my armor pieces so that they conform a little bit better to my body. I'm still going to have to use magnets to attach them. Mostly, the reason I do magnets for this is because I need to be able to take it off the dress to wash the dress. So I can't just attach styrene to the dress. Styrene does not wash very well, if you've ever tried it. It does not go in the washing machine, and it definitely should not go in the dryer, because you won't have armor when it comes out. So I had to have a way to very quickly remove it from the dress. So, of course, magnets and washers, nice and easy. So eventually I will spray paint it. When Mother Nature stops literally raining on my parade, I will go outside and I will spray paint my armor. And of course, I'm having to do all sorts of little cleanup work on it because I'm a perfectionist and I don't want foam showing through the styrene anyway. So little itty bitty teeny tiny cuts everywhere, everywhere. But I'm getting there. I've done a lot of sewing in the last week, which a lot of it's in the other room and I won't get it. But I sewed the bodice. I painted the upper edge of that already. I sewed the skirt and the lining. So I just need to attach the two together and grab a zipper.
Yay, there you go.
I mean, all my pieces are already cut out. So right now it's just a matter of cleaning them up, painting them, attaching them. I'll have to make a little bit of chain mail technically, but it's a little bit of chain to attach all the armor pieces together. Since, of course, nothing in the Final Fantasy universe ever attaches the way you would expect armor to actually attach. So I have to make floating armor, of course. But I'll make it work. It's just a matter of having enough time to do it, because working overnights is really kind of cramping what ability I have to work on cosplay. So, you know, I'm doing what I can. And as far as other cosplay updates, since all of my panels for Project Akon were accepted, now I actually need to start getting down and putting out outlines, fleshing them out, starting to put together PowerPoints, starting to actually, you know, work towards having solid, acceptable panels for me to present at a large convention like Akon. So that's started to get on my radar as well. I'm starting to pattern out my pieces for Pyrrha, since I still really want to do Pyrrha for Akon. It's just a matter of, you know, I have to wait one more month until I'll have the budget to actually purchase the fabric for those costumes, and I'm going to have to start doing the armor real quick. I think I'm going to do foam and Warbler for that one. We'll see. Because it's compound curves. Ugh.
And I have a full sheet of Warbler that you haven't touched yet.
I left it for that reason. But it's just a matter of getting down and getting the work done. I've got the sketches done. I just have to get the patterns done. The dress isn't hard. It's just a standard Mandarin color dress. But getting the armor version done is going to take some time.
Yeah,
I wanted to do Over-Earth cosplay too. You know, I wanted to do Presea, but that may or may not even happen at this point. Just because severe time crunch. It's going to be all I can do to get Cosmos done for AllCon.
Right. That's why I haven't even, like, thought about putting anything new for AllCon. It's just, like, if stuff gets done, great. If it doesn't, I am not too concerned, because this is, like, my only big project for AllCon. If anything else doesn't get done, that's totally cool. And it's just reality. We're both busy working adults with new jobs, so we have to resort our priorities.
Yeah, and definitely change in budget.
Mm. My budget went up, so I'm a little happy about that.
Well, unfortunately, until I am perma-hired, my budget
right.
is basically going to be on check, since I don't get benefits and I don't get paid time off. So I have to be really, really careful with where I spend my money. And I'm, you know, going to have additional expense that I won't be reimbursed for starting probably end of this month.
Right, exactly. By the way, hi, Ooh. Mary. Thank you for watching us today. Mary's one of our judges at AllCon, which we'll be talking about in a moment. Yes, I know.
All right,
random mass of floating fabric. That's what clamp is.
Pretty much, yes. All right. So we have cosplay in the news.
Not really.
And well, the cosplay in the news is basically AllCon is in about 2 weeks, kids. So if you are considering entering the cosplay contest at this point, please, please sign up early. It helps us plan.
Please,
There have been a
please.
couple of questions regarding music and things like that. If you pre-register for the cosplay contest and you have music you would like us to use, you are welcome to send it to us. We do have to make sure it's family friendly because All Con is a family friendly con before we play it, but we're willing to work with you. So if you have requests, yeah, go ahead and send them to us. And if you have any last minute questions about the contest, don't hesitate to ask. Please do ask, and we will answer you very promptly. So that said, we hope to see as many of you guys as possible at AllCon. We highly encourage you to participate in the costume contest. Even if you don't, we still would love for you guys to stop by, say hello. We don't bite. We would love to talk to you guys. We will be around, Val will be around all of Friday. I probably will not be because I actually have to work the night before. Since I work overnights, I'll have to work until 9 a.m. and then I'm going to go home and collapse and sleep. And then I will be at the con after I've slept for a little while. So we will both be at the cosplay contest on Friday. Hopefully, if I get Saturday morning off of work, then I will also be there all of Saturday. Otherwise, you guys probably will not see me for very much of Saturday, unfortunately, because I will, again, have to sleep for the
Yay,
cosplay
sleep.
contest.
Sleep is
So,
for the weak.
them's the stakes of being an adult, kids, and having to work an overnight job. We do what we can. We will film what panels we can for you guys. We'll definitely film both cosplay contests Friday and Saturday. They are not doing the championship this year, I noticed.
Yeah, they are not. I guess that was probably a test run to see what would happen. And I'm guessing that the turnout and the events that went down afterwards were not what they had wanted, what they predicted, I should say. So, that would have been nice. I would have totally entered with my Liara costume. That would have been really fun to do, actually. That's okay.
No worries. And of course, we always encourage you guys also to enter for the Saturday cosplay contest. If you can't make Friday, that is okay. We're not going to hate you for not entering on Friday. You are always welcome to enter the Saturday contest. The only difference is that the Saturday contest tends to be a little bit more crowded. That's all.
Another
And for
big
both
thing that I want
events,
to,
probably.
exactly, we want to reiterate to people is that this cosplay contest has been completely restructured. It's brand spanking new. Anybody can enter with any costume. You're not limited to just Japanese-oriented content. So if you want to come from a Western video game, if you want to come from a novel, if you want to come from a movie, from a TV show, that totally fine. We will take it. It's meant to be an all-inclusive event. Our focus is on the play aspect. We want you to become whatever character that you are dressing up as. So please, for the love of all that's crap, please enter. As
And
I
we do have
shake
some
my
really cool
camera
prizes.
furiously.
We do have some really cool prizes.
We do. And trophies.
Yes.
I was very
And
stingy
if you
about the
don't cosplay.
trophies.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. So, speaking of sci-fi, odd segue, I know.
That's a really odd segue.
AllCon, I've seen, from what I have seen, AllCon is primarily sci-fi fantasy. Even
Yes,
though
this is
it
true.
does have all things, mostly sci-fi fantasy. So, and I'm sure that this will be covered at AllCon at some point, probably mentioned in opening ceremonies. Unfortunately, we lost a great one here in the last 24 hours. For those of you who have not seen the news, unfortunately, we have the passing of Mr. Leonard Nimoy. So, live long and prosper, sir. We will definitely miss you. Hopefully, there will be some Star Trek cosplay in homage at AllCon, because that would be really neat. I know it's not directly cosplay related, but since a lot of those of us who cosplay are geeks and nerds, it really kind of hurts when we lose the great ones.
And
So.
especially with Star Trek, it's one of those shows that really started the whole convention scene. Without it, we really wouldn't have what conventions are today. And so many people started dressing up because of Star Trek. So it's
And
like,
actually, if you've been to conventions where they've had the Star Trek cast,
those are the
it has been
best.
a
Those are the
freaking
best.
amazing.
Oh, I love
Because
those.
not only do the fans enjoy themselves, but the cast and crew apparently seem to enjoy themselves quite a bit too. They enjoy being there, and they're humbled by the fans. and us wanting to cosplay in homage to them. They think it's really cool.
Yeah, the last
So.
one that I went to was we had Kirk, Picard and Sisko. I was hoping to get Janeway because Janeway's my personal favorite because I love Voyager. But they did a Q&A panel where Kirk was the one asking the questions to the other captains, and they kind of went back and forth and played off like they were the Star Trek characters. Oh, that was so much fun. And you don't get to experience that every day. So that was definitely worth the ticket price. And yeah, moments like that make it worthwhile.
Indeed. And the other thing that I wanted to mention in the cosplay news is that Dallas Comic Con has a really good slate of guests so far. So if you
Pricey.
guys are looking for, it is a little bit pricey, but if you guys are looking for another local con to experience, Comic Con here in Dallas is certainly a good one to start with. It's no San Diego Comic Con, it's no New York Comic Con, but it is still very enjoyable, very entertaining. You may consider going. It is a little bit pricey, but this year I think you'll get your money's worth,
As
especially
a
if you're.
regular attendee, yeah, I recommend it.
Yes. For those who have not seen, obviously by the time we're recording this, it has already been posted on their Facebook. Mini-Acon has been canceled. And they are looking to see if they can reschedule it. It is unknown at this point because they would have to reschedule all of the artists, they'd have to reschedule the voice acting guests, the industry guests, they would have to rebook the library if they're going to hold it in the library again. So do keep an eye on their Facebook, as I do believe they'll announce it fairly quickly if they're able to reschedule. But it was canceled for safety reasons because it's icy outside, kids.
There's real snow out there, and it's Texas. Oh my
Not just snow, but it was genuinely icing over. We had sleet and freezing rain overnight too.
Yeah, and we get to have more.
And
Woo-hoo.
yes, for those who may say that, oh my gosh, it's a quarter inch of snow, why the heck are you closing down everything? It's
Because we're
because
Texas.
we live in Texas and we're not very good at driving on ice, as seen by the Dallas traffic map for the last 48 hours. And the what looks like somebody dropped a whole bunch of push pins on the map, accidents. Clearly, we don't know what we're doing, and we should
I'm gonna
not be
post
doing
that
that.
picture in this episode. I have to. Like, here's the map. Bam. Enjoy.
Yeah, we don't know what we're doing, and so
No.
we have no business being on the roads. So that's why they canceled Mini-Acon. It's much safer that way. All right. I believe that is the end of what we have in the cosplay news. So,
It
all right. So now we have a very special presentation for you guys. We were able to get an interview with one of the prop making masters in the community currently, Vulpen Props. And so we hope you guys enjoy this interview. Here you go.
Hey Potters, welcome to this special edition of CosPod. We have an interview with an awesome guest. We would like to introduce to you guys Vulpen Props, also known as Harrison Cricks. Harrison, thank you for being on the show with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. That's standard response. Thank you for having me. I'm terrible at interviews. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. So lots of lots of stuttering.
No worries, no worries. So first, I wanted to congratulate you on your Maker Magazine mention. That's actually really big news.
Yeah, thank you. That was really cool. I did a thing for them, geez, probably about a year and a half ago. They have a thing called Maker Camp, and it's all done via Skype online, that kind of thing. And they teach kids about techniques, and they bring in a lot of industry people. And when they called me up, they're like, "Hey, we're gonna have you on, and we're gonna have you on with Fawn Davis, who is a big SFX guy out in California, and then we're gonna have you on with Frankie Polito, who's on done a lot of stuff with Chessig, who's on Space Off." And I was like, "Why am I part of this? That's cool, but." I am way outclassed here by people who've been in the industry for much longer than I am, far more experienced. But anyway, I did this really cool thing for Make and got to know some of the editors, writers over there. And Jason wrote up a really cool article, and that was very flattering. It's cool when the sort of voice of the Make community, Make Magazine, they do all the maker fairs. They're like, hey, this guy's work is pretty cool. That's deeply flattering.
I liked the very cheeky book review that they did, where they were going to try and outclass you.
They touched on something. The price point of the book is something I kind of struggled with for a while, like trying to figure out exactly how much to charge and you know, what's it worth. And I kind of agonized over that. My book is $8, and it seems like the trend in cosplay, DIY bookmaking, that kind of thing, is like $5, right? Mm-hmm. So I was really worried that I'm going to throw this thing out there and everybody's going to go like, $3 more? Who do you think you are? What gives you the right? The response I've gotten mostly has been like, wow, you're really an idiot for listing it at $8.
it seems like a steal.
if people are willing to pay $8, that's fantastic. If people think they're getting a deal for $8, that's even better. So I'm happy. And if I'm happy and they're happy, yay, everybody's happy.
So speaking of the book, if anybody would like to purchase it, and of course, we at CosPod highly recommend this book. I mean, like pretty much everybody has said, it is worth the $8. You can find it on vulpenprops.com. It is an ebook downloadable. I believe there's also a print version in the works.
There is. Right now, I'm trying to determine what sort of run to have for the print version. And I know that a few people have managed. I think Bill Duran, actually, with his Foamsmith trilogy, he just got his first demo copy done. And I need to figure out what the kind of demand is for that before I go and print these things and then end up like with 500 of them sitting on my shelf or having to try and like my mother coming in and going like, oh, honey, I'll buy 30 and send them to my friends. You know, I don't want to end up with that. So I'm trying to figure out exactly how many to order. And then, of course, the price point of that and all this business stuff that you have to figure out. So in between actually making props, which is my full-time job. That's typically my work goes into the builds and the progress and the projects first, and then whatever pathetic amount of spare time I have left over goes into books and PDFs and posters and that kind of thing.
Okay. And I noticed that in looking at the book, a great deal of it is occupied by documentation, really just explicit, detailed documentation of all of the different techniques that you display. What was that like, having to thoroughly document everything?
It's okay. I have an iPhoto album, right? Or rather, an entire iPhoto library dedicated to only props and replicas. It's basically where I put all my progress photos since about late 2007. And I used to have this ancient Fuji camera, this little, you know, like crappy digital camera. And the autofocus didn't work very well. And so whenever I took a progress photo, I had to take like 5. From sort of different angles to try and get the light and the autofocus to work correctly, just because I didn't have money for a better camera. And so I've gotten in the habit of whenever I take a progress photo, I don't just, you know, one. I usually get it from like, you know, 6 or 7 different angles of the same thing, and I take 5 or 6 photos. And that means I've ended up with this iPhoto library of somewhere in the neighborhood of 80,000 photos.
Wow.
Yeah, since 2007. And then on my Flickr, I pick the best of those to show on my Flickr, and that's where I use all my web hosting for my blogs and all that sort of stuff. So my Flickr, I've got somewhere in the neighborhood of like 5,500 photos uploaded on there right now. So I thought, okay, I'm gonna write a book about paint. I'm just gonna be able to yank stuff out of that library and slap this together, no problem, easy peasy, you know, book will be done in it. I think my original estimate was I started it at mid-September, and I'm like, end of October, easy, I will have this nailed. And it turned out I didn't have anything. Like, none of the photos that I wanted were actually in there, because I needed to take photos of while the process was happening. So, you know, this is a specific way. For example, there's a section on painting and masking, you know, masking off 2 colors and laying down so you get nice, even paint lines without any bleed or any chipping or cracking or that kind of thing. And I know how to do that, and I figured it out after, you know, doing a lot of research, doing a lot of experimentation. And I had a bunch of photos, but all of my photos were a prop with a bunch of tape on it and then a prop finished. And so there was never anything like, this is specifically how you pull the paint off. This is specifically how you paint the next three layers and all that sort of stuff. So I ended up having to build like four new props just for the book, which was nice. I know a lot of other prop makers, and they sell kits the same way that I do on my website. And we trade those back and forth. So I'll send somebody a helmet, they send me an axe, and that sort of thing. So I have this giant box in the corner of my shop, just all of these kits that I've never gotten around to doing. So it was kind of nice because I got to finish all of these kits, but I ended up having to shoot entirely new content. So almost everything in the book right now, or you know, as it's published, is, I would say, new content. Almost, hard to put a number on it, but maybe 85-90% is stuff that's not on my Flickr, not in my library. It's just stuff made for the book. I did not expect that to happen, which is why my release date was not October, but end of January.
That's still really good for a book.
Yeah.
You know, when I first got into this back in 2007, 2008, I had this sort of idea like, oh, maybe one day I'll write a book about things. And that was kind of before people obviously started doing the PDF thing. And then everybody started doing the PDF thing. And then I went, oh, if I do it now, I'm just going to look like some sort of, you know, complete jerk copycat. Now everybody's doing books, so I'll do a book. And Bill Duran, again, Punish Props, and Kamui, both really kind of pushed me into it. They were like, hey, just, you know, do you really need to do this? You really need to do this. It's going to be a great revenue stream. It'll help the community out. You have a ton of information. You should absolutely do it. And eventually they got me to do it. You know, I met up with them at Dragon Con, and they just kept hammering it into my head, like, write the book. Except Kamui, in her delightfully very always cheerful public kind of way, looks at me and she goes, oh, I wrote two in like a week. It's no big deal. She's like, I just got those guys. They're done. So I was like, oh, okay, well, I worked as a graphic designer for 7 years. I know page layout programs. You know, maybe not a week, but I can get that done pretty quickly. And I don't know how she does it in a week. She's apparently streamlined her process way more than I have. So bonus points to her, but I don't think I'll ever have a 1 week book.
I have to say, the fact that you got it done in less than 6 months is already an accomplishment on it to its own. Because most of us are like, yeah, it takes like a year and a half to develop a book if you're lucky.
Well, you know, I do have a little bit of background in graph design. Well, a little bit. That was my previous life, was a graph designer for an ad agency here in Atlanta. And I did a lot of work for Coca-Cola. And some of the less exciting things I used to do were like 800-page digital books for them. You know, things on new product releases and new marketing initiatives and blah. But I do know the programs very well. So that part wasn't the hard part. It was more the documentation and the building of all the new things. And I really wanted to make sure it was very thorough. So a lot of the processes, you know, I would be doing something with one hand and photographing it with the other, because some of these things are really time intensive. So you know, if you don't do certain things in a period of time while the paint's curing, it's kind of ruined. So I wanted to make sure that it was as detailed as possible, so that people really could follow the process.
Now, given that you have mentioned that you have very little free time, you are just bombarded with project requests, I would imagine. So how do you pick and choose which projects that you will go ahead and take on? And do you have, perchance, a dream project or a holy grail that you would like to work on?
Well, I have a list, a gallery on my Facebook account, and it's, you know, projects that I really want to do. And on there are some really elaborate things and some less elaborate things, but people have sort of picked and culled from that a few things over the past, I'd say, 2 years. You know, I'll put a post out there, and then maybe in some cases hours later somebody will send me an email like, I would absolutely love to have this made. Those pieces tend to have a little bit of a discount to them because I just want to build them. So I don't charge, you know, the same, I guess, kind of pricing that I would if it were a project that I wasn't quite as interested in. That said, I haven't really built something I don't love since I'd say 2008. You know, I've had a very incredibly fortunate position for an artist where I can only work on the things that I really know that I'll be able to pour all of my effort and ability into. And I think that that ends up in me building better pieces. So, you know, for example, if somebody comes to me from, a, you know, asking for a prop from, I can only think of the guy's name now. I don't know the game. Dante, with the ebony and ivory pistols.
Oh, gonna, okay, yes.
Yeah.
Devil May Cry?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've never played that game. And it's got some interesting, you know, aesthetic to it, but it doesn't really hit me. You know, it's not something I'm really into. So I've gotten requests for those, and I've always passed on something like that, even though it's within my skill set, because I never want to just take a job for money. I want to make sure that the thing I'm delivering to my client is something that I'm passionate about, because I know I'm going to come up with something that's better in the end result for them. Flip side of that, recently I got a commission for Bayonetta's pistols. Again, never played the game, but the art style is something I love. I think it's really pretty. I love the different, I guess, take on how these weapons work. They're still recognizable as pistols, but they've got some really cool aesthetic, and you know, the curling gold filigree is something I really love. You see that show up on a lot of stuff I built before. So that I jumped at because I definitely want to build those just because it's something I'm really into. So I guess my first criteria would be whether or not it's something I really do want to make. And then we go from there. You know, I've had people come up to me and they're like, oh, would you make this thing for me? An example, the transistor. From Transistor, and that's something I would love to build. And I've had a few people come up to me like, I would love for you to make this. I have $200, and I'm like, I will never, you know, go after somebody or try, you know, give them a lecture about how that's not a lot of money or something, because $200 is a lot of money. Okay, you know, $50 is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Different positions in life have different perspectives on what is and is not a high budget, but you know, I have to keep my doors open. I have to pay my bills. And something like Transistor would be a lot more than $200. Mm-hmm. So something I want to build, if the budget is there, then if I have the time. And the time is the biggest one right now. Because even a small project for me will take about 2 weeks. And I have a lot of industry things that are going on that I have to make hard deadlines for, like PAX and Comic-Con and Dragon-Con and PAX Prime. And so if I can shoehorn it in there, then I'm good. But as far as things lay out right now, I think I'm booked until October. And that's without opening up commissions. It's just emails that people have sent in like, hey, can you work on something? Second part of your question was a sort of a dream project. And one of them I'm nearly finished with right now. I'd say it's about 98% done. And that's Garuda's Spine from Final Fantasy XIV. And I started playing 14. I actually got the flu about a year and a half ago and was just laid out in bed, could not move. And I was, I couldn't get up doing 2 weeks. And so I was big into Final Fantasy because, you know, what else am I going to do? And that was, I remember running around one of the towns and saw somebody walking past with that thing. And I turned and I just sort of like followed them around the town. I think they picked up on it eventually because they sent me a message. They're like, what are you doing? Like, it's just, no, this is really pretty. I just, can I look at your bow? And I creeped out on this person for a little while. But I knew then, I was like, I have to build this thing. It's gorgeous, and it would be a huge technical challenge, and I would absolutely love to build it. And I've been working on that for just about a year now. I had a very patient client who sent me a message right when I posted it up on Facebook. I'm like, hey, I really want to build this. And it's nearly done. It's enormous. It's very complicated. It's... I think, though, one of the prettiest things I've ever made. So that was kind of my unicorn project, and I'm just wrapping it up. So after that, I'd say a warthog from Halo. It is one of the things I will do someday.
That might actually prompt me to make my Halo armor, so I might sign me up for that one.
Before graphic design, I was a mechanic, and that's how I paid my way through college. So I used to rebuild cars, and I used to be big into off-road, you know, Jeeps and that kind of thing. So it's not something I'm unfamiliar with. I just have to sculpt the body of a truck.
Right.
So, you know, no big deal.
So last but not least, we have a couple of questions that were submitted by our listeners because we did prompt them for questions that they would like to ask you.
Cool.
And one of the first was, what three things, for example, tools, materials, supplies, can you not go without?
I'm going to skip the sarcastic answer of like coffee and caffeine.
Those are assumed.
Those are essential.
Yeah. We all need food and oxygen. But if I were to pick three, let's say, items you can buy in a store for my build process, I would say the first would be a rotary tool. I've burned through so many. I started with Dremels, and I would go through a Dremel in about 4 to 6 months. Then I moved on to a supplier called Proxon, and Proxons are a little bit more expensive and they don't vibrate quite as much. I would burn through a Proxon in about 10 to 12 months. And now I have a Fordham, and a Fordham is this giant motor on a hook, and it's got a flex shaft to it. And they're like $350. But it can cut through concrete. It's great. And I have yet to kill it. So I got tired of buying a new rotary tool every 6 months. So now I have this big, crazy monster that's a little scary to operate. It's got a foot pedal for the speed. So a rotary tool. Don't necessarily have to go the crazy route that I did, but definitely a rotary tool. Second would be sandpaper in various grits. I would say that is a one item, so you can buy it in packs, but 220, 120, and probably like really rough, like 50 grit sandpaper, because I do a lot of reductive sculpting. So start with a big block of something, shape it down to the shape that you want. I don't do that much sort of clay stuff where you kind of build and massage until it's the shape that you're after. So I think that sandpaper would definitely be something everybody could benefit from having more of. And then, man, just three is tough because I want to say my bandsaw, because, I had an assistant, for a little while. She worked with me for about 2 years, and she liked to joke that if I could brush my teeth with a bandsaw, I would, because it was my go-to for everything. And it's because it was like the first tool that I bought. So whenever I had some sort of thing I needed to do, there was some jig or, you know, assemblage or, you know, slide or something that I could figure out how to do it on a bandsaw. So I would probably say the bandsaw comes in third. That's, you know, a pretty expensive piece to list, but it's, I wouldn't be able to do my work without it. In fact, I'm thinking of buying a second one, just because I like to have different blades on them, and I get really tired of changing blades all the time.
Do you have any tools you would recommend for people who are just starting out making props?
Yeah. I think it's going to come down to the way that you build your props. I tend to work a lot with hard materials. So I work a lot with resin. I work a lot with expanded urethane foam, polyester with Bondo, that kind of stuff. And for me, that means that most of my tools have to have high RPM, sharp cutting edge. You know, I work a lot with drum sanders, scroll saw, lathe, drill press, that kind of thing. But that's the type of building that I do. If you're going to be building stuff with foam, you're not going to get a lot of use out of a lathe or a mill or, you know, a table saw. And then if you're building stuff out of Warbla, you're not going to get a lot of use out of a bandsaw. So I'm going to issue this with a caveat of how I build, because somebody like Kamui, who's specialized in Warbla, or somebody like Builder Ed, who's specialized in foam, would have different recommendations. All of that being said, I would still go back to the rotary tool, and spending money on some really kind of nice, fancy bits for it. The Proxons, they started about $100, and I think that's well worth the hike in price from a Dremel or a Black & Decker for their reliability and their versatility too, with you know, sculpting and you know, being a kind of one size fits all solution. So I hate to give the same answer twice, but it's, you know, I started off in 08 with a old Dremel tool and a palm sander, and yeah, that's it. Actually, just those two were the only power tools I had, outside of like stuff I used on my car, you know, from my mechanic days. But it's not like you can use an impact wrench that much in cosplay. So the only thing is I had to sculpt with were a Dremel tool and a palm sander, and I made the portal gun out of just those two things. And so You know, if you just have a Dremel and that's all you have, but you have some time, you can get away with that being your only power tool.
I feel so much better because I have a Dremel and an orbital sander.
Yeah.
And a scroll saw.
You buy a whole bunch of nice different bits and different sanding discs, and it's remarkable what you can do with just those two things.
Mm-hmm. The next question we received says, where should beginners look for information, for example, on wiring and lighting?
If you're after wiring and lighting, first off, Comwe's electronics book that just came out is a really good primer on introductions to simple circuitry, DC electronics, LEDs, that kind of thing. If you want to expand into that a little bit further, there's another ebook by a couple, and I forget their names, it's off the top of my head, but they go by Arms, Armor, and Awesome. And they have an ebook out on electronics and illumination. I think they touch on sound in there as well. If you don't mind doing a little bit of digging, there's two great websites you can check out, sparkfun.com and adafruit.com. And both of them are DIY maker level stuff. And they'll start you out with, very introductory. This is a battery. This is electrons. This is how to wire up one LED. And they move all the way into crazy RGB LED controls with Arduinos what's the name of the Raspberry Pis and all that. You can go to the moon with that stuff. That's where I learned is SparkFun's tutorials, especially with the Arduino stuff. So yeah, those would be my four recommendations for electronics. Outside of that, I'll do some really quick name dropping here. For props in general, there's the Replica Prop Forum, that is a wealth of information. You go through the search tools, there's people on there. I think they've got a user base of somewhere in the neighborhood of like 180 or 200,000 registered users, and then all these people are posting progress all the time. There's probably 700 people building an Iron Man right now, tons of information on foam builds, resin casting. And then if you ask questions, there's a lot of industry professionals who go to the RPF who will be able to help out or chime in. So the RPF is a great catch-all for mold making. Smooth On's website and their YouTube channel have, if I'm honest, somewhat dry videos, but very informative. If you can get past the terrible background music they use, just like old beige elevator music, just really bad. But the information is solid. So for mold making, that's great. Casting, again, with Smooth On is really good. So those are kind of the biggest ones that I can drop, because those are the places I got all my information from when I was trying to figure out how the heck to do all of this stuff.
Okay. And last but not least, do you have any advice for aspiring prop makers?
Sand more.
Sand all the things.
Keep sanding. And when you think you're done sanding, keep sanding. Because you're just not. You're never done sanding. Let's see. Experiment with new materials. There's definitely a right way to go about things in a lot of times, but people are coming up with new and unique ways of treating, the same old, and the challenging established standards, and that comes from people trying new things and sharing new things. And that would be the other thing, is continue to participate in the community. Continue to put your work out there, document it, and share it for the sake of sharing. Share it for the sake of sharing, for the betterment of the entire group of builders. One of the reasons I sort of held back from writing a book for a while was because I didn't want it to seem like I was just grabbing at money because I had a following and because everybody else was publishing books and because it was some easy cash to make. That's another reason why the book took me as long as it did, is I wanted it to have a lot more information than anything else I'd put out there. But I don't think that information should necessarily be behind a paywall. you know, that you should have to subscribe to somebody's blog and pay $5 a month to read their updates, or, you know, have to buy an ebook in order to learn the tips and tricks that somebody feels like sharing. If that's the way you want to operate, if that's the way you want to run your business, by all means, go ahead. And I'm not going to tell somebody not to do things that way. But I personally won't. You know, I always want to put my blogs out there. Every project I do, every project I finish, I put a very long blog post. It usually takes me 3 or 4 hours to write up that details exactly how I built everything. Because I did not pioneer any of this knowledge. I didn't come up with urethane resin. I didn't, you know, figure out silicon mold making for myself. Everything I know, outside of my own, you know, personal experiences, but all of the fundamentals that I know, came from other people being very generous and sharing that information. So other prop makers out there, I would suggest, you know, push the limits, test new things, and share your results. That got way preachier than I think it should have.
But see, this is why we like you, and this is why we appreciate you. You're one of the few people who actually pushes your work out there and say, this is how I made it. Go have fun trying to replicate it.
Okay, well, thank you, because it just, I got done with that diatribe, and it sounded like I just have my head way up my ass.
Far from it. No, it's the exact opposite.
Yeah, that's the number one question. Whenever you see something really cool, you walk up to that person, you're like, how did you do that?
Yeah, you know, I've met other builders, you know, at Dragon Con and at conventions, and I look at armor, and 95% of people out there, you're like, hey, how did you do this? And they're so cool about, you know, they want to tell you, because mm-hmm. if you're really proud of something like that, you want to, you know, dive into it and talk shop, and that's really fun. But the 5% out there that I've met, I'm like, hey man, I had this really cool paint. How did you do that? They're like, you know, it's an industry secret, bro. Like, you just got to put some time in, you know, figure it out. You just got to, you know, you got to pay your dues, man. It's, people aren't going to give stuff to you. I'm like, get bent. Again, my own personal perspective. If you want to be that guy, by all means.
All right. Well, we would like to thank you once more for being with us today. Thank you for a wonderful interview. We had a wonderful time.
Well, I feel like I railroaded the whole thing and said 4 words, so I apologize to your normal listeners who probably want to hear you guys talk for completely monopolizing the entire thing.
Oh, we do that every 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. So it's fine.
It's nice to be able to talk about this and have a conversation with people, because like I said, I spend all day by myself. Social interaction. I'm getting a refresher course.
We'll get you out of your Quarian bubble. It'll be fine. Yeah.
I appreciate that. That's, I think one of my next cosplays should be Cal Rieger.
That would be fantastic.
So I could just actually put a charcoal respirator in the mask.
Yeah.
You know, go to DragonCon and not get sick. It would be great.
It would be awesome.
Words to live by.
We hope you guys enjoyed that as much as we did. It was a lot of fun, and you know, there's always new things to learn from other people in the community. And so
we're really fortunate to get prop makers on too, because usually we get a lot of cosplay guests, so it's like prop makers, it's like, wow, Amber was having so much fun with that. I didn't know what to ask. I was just kind of like, this is so cool, I'm learning so much.
I always enjoy picking people's brains. And what I was going to say is, if you see these guys at a convention, don't hesitate to ask questions. I mean, worst they'll tell you is, sorry, I can't talk right now, but it never hurts to actually, you know, just ask, how did you do that? Because we won't learn any other way unless people help each other out.
Exactly.
And so I'm really happy for people like Harrison and like Bill Duran of Punished Props, who you guys will actually see next episode, because they're willing to share their knowledge in the form of, you know, ebooks, print books, tutorial videos, websites, podcasts, all of the above. You know, it's really great that the community is willing to do this. So good on them.
And I've met both of them in person at Dragon Con, this past Dragon Con. They're really nice guys. They love talking to people. As long as you don't get into old goo goo gaga phase of, oh my god, you're the cosplay genius. Oh my god. They're like, no, don't just be normal with me. As long as you're normal, they're really cool. They love talking to people.
They're normal people too. Well, normal as much as the rest of us are.
Normal.
we're
all dorks.
Normal.
I mean, let's be honest.
Yes. Yeah. All right.
If we were normal, we would not be doing this.
All right. And to end the show, a little bit of controversy, which, of course, we had to mention this in passing because, oh my gosh, it has taken over the internet.
Oh, I believe God. I can't believe we're talking about this.
The dress. All right. So
the dress can go die. That's all I want to say before I get into a tangent.
To put a positive cosplay spin on this, the notion of accuracy in color is actually a really big thing in the cosplay community. And there are people who genuinely get upset if you don't do the exact color in the anime of this character. And especially given technology nowadays, with screen resolutions and color resolutions being the way they are, you can actually get different colors on two different screens from the exact same website. And that's just because that's the nature of technology and how our eyes work, which kind of was the whole thing behind the dress, was it's science. It's about how our eyes work and perceive color. And this gets even more difficult if you're trying to cosplay a manga character where the manga is black and white, because then you have no color at all. Yes.
This is where you cut away to Belle. She points at her dress form.
Yes.
Hi!
Ray Earth started out as
a manga. This thing has like 20 different colors easily be changed.
Mm-hmm. And the reason why we brought this up is that Cosplay Tutorial, which you can find on Facebook, if you just search Cosplay Tutorial, they have a wonderful site, which is obviously comprised of cosplay tutorials. But they actually made a post about how you can deal with accuracy and color of cosplay. Because if you're truly looking to be really accurate, you do need to think about color. And they bring up a couple of good points in that even with anime, the same character in two different episodes can have two different colors of hair or two different colors of outfit. And it's enough to make you want to tear your hair out, because you don't know which one is supposed to be the right one per the creator. They could have had two different animators or two different color artists working on the show, and they just happen to use different colors.
Exactly. Sailor Moon is notorious for that.
Yes. It's not something that's uncommon, especially among major anime.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the things that you'll need to determine is if you want contrast in your outfit. Say if a character looks like they have black hair and a black shirt, and then next episode they'll have the same black shirt but they'll have blue hair, slightly, you know, blue-black hair. You need to decide, do you want the similarity, do you want all black, or do you want the contrast, which is blue on black? You know, the sample image that's in here that I'm referring to is from Bleach. It's Yumichika from Bleach. And in the first frame, he has black hair. In the next frame, it's kind of a bluish black. And it's really hard to tell the difference sometimes. So that's one way of looking at it, if you want, you know, the monotone or if you want contrast. The other thing that you can do that's easily available is to go look at the wiki. Or if you have the reference book in the manga. I mean, not reference as in reference pictures, but reference as in character statistics. A lot of series will do like power levels or abilities or special powers or things like that. And they'll actually list what the mangaka wants as the official colors. Wikis generally take from the reference books, which is why I say you can go look at the wiki. But they'll tell you, hair is black with red highlights, not blue with red highlights. So they'll actually tell you, this is what it's supposed to be. You can, to an extent, you can rely on other cosplayers to see what they've done with it. And then you have to decide, you know, do I want to do it that way or do I want to be different? There's no right or wrong way of doing this, basically. It's the long and short of it. But there are, you know, references that you can search for. And then ultimately, if you're, say, cosplaying from a manga and there are no references, there's not a wiki, there's not a reference tome in the manga, and it's all in black and white, well, then you get to pick. And nobody can really tell you that you're wrong because there are no references to contradict you. And that's one of the nice things about it, is that you can be creative. I mean, we're not saying that you have to be accurate with these things. You don't have to do it the exact color of the anime. You don't have to do it the exact color that it says in the wiki. That's only if you are shooting for accuracy as referenced by, you know, whichever show you're doing. So ultimately, you know, people are going to see different colors in your cosplay. That's just the science of it. Don't get too worked up about it, as the majority of the social media network seems to have done in the last 48 hours.
You know,
don't fret about it too much, because ultimately what matters is how you carry yourself in that cosplay. You could have it be all the wrong colors, but if you carry yourself well, people aren't going to care. They'll just look at it and go,
it's your costume.
That's a creative take on it. I like it. Or even if they don't, they'll say, that's a really well-made costume. Because it's more in the costume than the colors.
Yeah. There's one more thing I want to add to it that I don't remember that they brought this up, but something else to consider is your skin tone. Because there are certain shades of blue or red or orange or whatever that don't really complement your skin tone as well as others. And I know that was my biggest challenge with Sailor Mercury. Her blue changes at least 30 times over the course of the first season of Sailor Moon. It's impossible to get the right blue. So I chose a blue that matched one of the episodes but also best complemented my skin tone, and that's how I was able to go from there. There might be people who said, that's not the right blue, and it's like, here's like 20 different variations. You pick one. This is the one I'm happy with. This is the one that makes me look good, so deal with it. So, yeah. Think about your skin tone, too. That makes a huge difference. But also be happy with your costume. If you're happy with it, then fudge everybody else.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can't find that exact color. If you're looking for, you know, a very precise color blue wig or a very precise color blue fabric.
Exactly.
If you can't find it, you can dye it to whatever color you want. And sometimes it's okay if you're off by just a couple of shades. I mean, yeah. Haters gonna hate, as
exactly.
They say. You know, purists are going to find problems with pretty much whatever they want to find problems with. So, you know, don't sweat it too much. Color choice and you being a couple of shades off, potentially, is really small fish to fry in the scheme of a costume.
Exactly. It's your costume. You do what you want with it. If you think it's this color, then do it.
Mm-hmm. And don't worry about, you know, I know it's trite to say don't worry about what others think. And yeah, to an extent it is kind of trite. But in the same way, if you worry too much about what other people think, you're not going to have fun.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, having fun is half the battle. Go cosplay!
G.I. Joe!
So go, you know, at least get the having fun part of it.
Exactly. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. That's like the one thing I'll say.
Fair enough. All right, so that will bring a close to this episode 84 of CosPod, the podcast for all things cosplay. If you guys would like to get in touch with us, as always, social media explosion here. Also, if you would like to sign up for the cosplay contest, you can find that information on our Facebook and on our homepage, which is cospod.org. If you would like to see more information about AllCon, you can go to all-con.org.
.net.
Sorry, .net. I always get those confused. All-con.net.
There we go. Yay.
And if you specifically want the cosplay rules, then you can go to all-con.net/cosplay.html.
Woohoo!
And that is our little page, our little corner of their website that has all of our cosplay rules, judges, all that good stuff. And of course, if you guys have any If you guys have any comments, questions, concerns, suggestions, anything for us, if you'd just like to give us a compliment, you can always email us at podcast@cospod.org. Otherwise, we will see you guys next time, where we will be interviewing Bill Duran of Punished Props.
Yes! He likes foam. We like him. Bye, guys.